Believers in Bigfoot say.
How many people go missing every year in the United States? According to National Missing and Unidentified Persons Database, which is funded by the U.S. Department of Justice, more than 600,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Just in the United States?
In 1 year.
God dang.
And in our little state of...
It's almost a million, barely over half, but that seems like a lot.
It's a lot. In Maine, our little baby state, this year, so far, there are 108 people missing. And right now, there are a couple of men missing in our area, and people are noticing. People post about it. One family made signs of their adult son's face and put him, those signs, almost like political campaign signs, on all the major roads in a couple of the counties. And the whole thing is that...
Like a lost cat.
Yeah.
But that's sad.
I know. But we like to think that we notice, right? That
yeah.
When people disappear... Someone is like, oh, where did Sean go?
But where's Waldo?
Exactly. But sometimes people, none of us do. And because you, my friend, were a cop in Downeast, Maine, where this story takes place, and because I had a stint as a reporter and newspaper editor, there's an occasional case that we talk about on Do Know where we not only know the location, but we also know the players, the cops, the DA, the people whose hearts were broken. And that's the case when it comes to Richard Bellatieri, a Trenton, Maine man, a nice man, an accountant who went missing and nobody noticed. So, this podcast is obviously a little weird because it's local and Sean
was involved.
Yes, you were, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah, so...
A little bit.
And because you, Bud, were a police sergeant in the town of Bar Harbor when all of this was happening, and it was essentially you as a big part of figuring things out, which is, you know, something other true crime podcasters don't have.
Not normally.
So I just want to say that as your wife, I remember you working on a ton of missing people cases or missing persons cases and a ton of fraud cases.
Right.
And I mean, you found so many runaway kids in so many places by just sniffing things out and following your hunches. But this case, it's always going to stick out to you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about Richard first before we talk about your role, okay?
Okay.
So Richard Bellatieri's body was located way back in 2013 in Trenton, Maine on the Goose Cove Road. And that's a road that connects two other roads that wind around the edge of a peninsula right behind the Cove Side houses. Goose Cove Road cuts through the forest and lupins and the blueberry fields, and it is really lovely. It provides locals a quicker way to commute between their jobs in Bar Harbor and Maine and homes in Trenton and Ellsworth on the mainland by bypassing that heavily traveled by tourists Route 3, which is kind of like the significant straight shot between Acadia National Park and Mount Desert Island, where we live, and the county hub, Ellsworth. The big old city of Ellsworth, Maine. All of it.
Simply put, Goose Cove Road is a little time saver for people with local knowledge.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah. But it's pretty, too. And we don't want to give out too many details yet about this, but a really horrifying thing happened there. And it's not typical for Maine. I guess we can just say that. And to understand that, we have to kind of explain Maine for people who don't live in the United States, right? So Maine, as quickly as possible, is the northernmost state on the eastern seaboard with a population density of a mere 43.1 people per square mile.
It's pretty low, huh?
Yeah, it's the least densely populated state in New England,
yeah,
in the American Northeast, in the eastern seaboard, and as well as all the states with an Atlantic coastline and all of those states east of the Mississippi River.
Really?
Yeah. We don't have a lot of people here. And it's also very, very white. It's 93% white. And it's also very, very French-Canadian ethnicity, with 24% of its residents having that history and heritage. And it also has the highest percentage of non-Hispanic whites of any other state at 89%.
Good Lord.
So it's whitey heaven, basically, if you're into whitey heaven. But, and it's also like, it's not diverse, you know, and there's not a lot of people here. And the people who are here kind of congregate around.
The diversity definitely congregates around each other, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Like, our island is a little diverse because we have the Jackson Laboratory. So and a lot of
tourist industry
and tourists and like a lot of people come here who are brilliant scientists right. from other countries. Right. And from our own. And so that kind of brings people in and gives them a reason to come to Maine. as does
to Bar Harbor.
Yeah, to Bar Harbor. And so does like the tourism. Right. Like a lot of people work here on visas. And so we get to have. We're not as whitey, and it's absolutely lovely here.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's a wonderful place. And so, to understand that this area that we live in, you have to imagine Maine, which is obviously, again, at that tippy-top state on the eastern seaboard of the U.S., and Hancock County, our county, is almost to the tippy-top of the coast of Maine, right? There's only one county past us.
Right.
And it's edged by the Atlantic Ocean, and it's prime country for sailors and lobstering and
vacationers.
Yeah, and it's full of these chubby little peninsulas that dot out into the ocean. And Trenton, Maine, where this story primarily takes place, is on one of those peninsulas. And Trenton is the last point of Maine proper before you cross the bridge onto Mount Desert Island, which holds our town, Bar Harbor, several other towns, and Acadia National Park.
You know what's funny?
What, boo?
Not until just now have I ever thought as Trenton as a peninsula, because the bridge to Mount Desert Island is so short and stupid.
It's the littlest bridge.
So I always thought, like, you know, Mount Desert Island is like the encompassing tip of Trenton.
What?
But now it's obviously not. It's what? All separated by ocean at times.
Yeah, so
that's, I just can't believe I never thought of that though.
Trenton, Maine is a chubby little peninsula. On one side's the Union River, on the other side's the Jordan River with a giant cross up on the hill in Lemoyne. And there's a tiny little bridge and only one way onto our island via road. And it's so tiny. And then it has a second little tiny bridge, right? That a lot of the times tourists will be like, I thought Bar Harbor was on an island. And you'll be like, dude, you are on an island. They'll be like, no.
You just didn't realize when you crossed the bridge.
And that's
it's
how
like
little bridge
is. It's like going to the dump in town, you cross the same size bridge.
Almost. Yeah, but it's also a very, very large island. You know, it's got 15 little baby mounds on it, 15 or so, depending on how you count a mountain. And like, you know, it's just so big that I think people forget that it's an island.
I do all the time.
Yeah. So anyways, back to Trenton. Trenton, Maine, is incorporated in 1789, still full of lobster traps and lobster pounds. It's got a fun park. But it was once a big place for shipbuilding and lumbering and shipping. And right now it's a pretty posh place for people to buy land. There are only, I think, 5 houses for sale right now when I was writing this podcast. I haven't checked today to see if it's gone up to 10 or down to 3.
Right.
And Trenton is a town that's big enough to have its own elementary school, but it's too small to support its own high school or police department. Crime there is covered by the local sheriff's department or the Maine State Police, depending on the day and the severity of the crime. Sounds like a good summary, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
All right.
As far as law enforcement, for
sure. So murders are usually the state police's turf. But sometimes, in our little county in Down East Maine, law enforcement agencies have to work together to get things done, at least in the initial parts of investigations.
Right.
And when I say sometimes, I mean a lot of time.
All over Maine. Yeah. If you're not in one of the 2 or 3 bigger cities, it's all over Maine.
Like, how many places can even investigate
nothing,
a murder?
Nothing would get... Oh, Maine State Police, Bangor and Portland. That's it, at least as far as I when I left.
Yeah, so for this very large, geographically stretched out, though very few people, state, there's only around, we'll say, 3 law enforcement agencies that even have the ability to investigate murders.
Right.
Which is kind of amazing, if you think about it. And all of that working together was definitely the case for Richard Bellatiri, the man who went missing and nobody really noticed. So let's get back to Richard, right? Because Richard is really important. And he wasn't a hermit. He wasn't a transient. He had a job. He was living in Maine, so he was most likely a white guy, and he was, who had neighbors. Like, he was known. People knew Richard. And he loved to garden, and he loved to hike, and he loved to swim and run and fish. He is a guy who people thought of as an active outdoorsman. And he was a carpenter and a handyman who did work for his neighbors sometimes and even on his own properties. And he loved ballroom dancing. He participated in dance programs. He loved making friends. So this is a guy who was out and about, mm-hmm. you know? And eventually his obituary read, he supported his community by volunteering his accounting services to help students prepare college loan applications, friends with tax filings, and other pro bono work. So not only was he out and about, he was giving. Like, he was giving his talent and his expertise to help his local little baby community here, or our little community, and the kids in this community too. You know, like, that's really lovely and amazing. And he was this guy who was actively building his future on the edge of our little county in Maine. And again, for those of you who don't know Hancock County, Maine, which I don't expect you to, this is a county that's full of very, very wealthy summer residents, like Astors and Vanderbilts and, you know, Pulitzers and Rockefellers. Yeah. But it's also full of working people too, like those kids needing college loan applications. There are scientists and teachers and lobstermen and retail workers and restaurant workers and people who work from home. It's a mix of backcountry roads that are basically two dirt tie tracks heading through pines and spruces and post-paved and going past paved driveways heading up to the Summer of States of people like Martha Stewart or that guy who produces Law and Order whose name I can never remember.
Me neither.
Is it Fox?
I don't know.
All right. Anyway, so Richard was in between those extremes. He wasn't poor. But he wasn't Martha Stewart. Right. And he was working and planning and building. And I think that because we're trying so hard, you know, to work and plan and build ourselves, that part of the story really resonates for me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, here's this guy doing good and trying to build and grow and explore, even though he's past 50, you know, and then it gets taken away, right?
Yes, it does.
So Richard was probably pretty psyched because he purchased some land in Trenton on the Goose Cove Road, and he started building a home there. He was 61 years old, and he was, you know, like I said, like still dreaming and thinking and doing things, which only makes us sadder. Not only did he have property in Trenton that he had just purchased, he also had a place in Hall Quarry on Mount Desert Island, which is where we live. So it was in Trenton on his property that Richard was last seen alive all the way back in June of 2012. And nobody reported him missing. But a savvy cop at the Bar Harbor Police Department had discovered he was probably gone, and he reported it to the state police. So how did that happen? To understand that, we have to talk about William Morse. My mother's maiden name is Morse, and
was he related to William?
Hell to the no. Okay. So William was another guy who flitted in between towns on the island and off the island. He was a guy who wasn't quite as prosperous or educated as Richard. William was also a barfly, allegedly. Everyone knew him, but he wasn't allegedly super well liked. There was scuttlebutt that he was pretty inappropriate with the ladies, right? Mm-hmm. And you'd run into him before, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So. Well, no. But I tried. I tried to not literally run into him, but I tried to meet him.
All right. Can you tell us a story about the chase? Oh, look at you. You're going to like, I'm going to take a sip of my vodka right now before I start talking it's about just my story.
It's seltzer water, dude.
Lie. No one can see it, baby. So, they didn't even know it was clear.
Well, I know, but you said vodka. It's a pint glass of vodka on the rocks.
He got a pint glass of vodka in his Budweiser Bud Light.
Tap and barrel glass, baby.
A tap and barrel.
Anyways.
Yes. Can you tell us about the chase, baby?
Yeah, dude.
The podcast is depending on you.
I know. So one day in the summer, I think it was pretty much the dead of summer. I can't remember, honestly. I was out on patrol and I had a complaint about a motorcycle that was leaving a local bar, and they felt that the operator was too impaired to be driving, and they gave a very vivid description of the motorcycle because it was a sport bike, and I know both the owners at the time of this bar were bikers, and they one drove a sport bike and one drove like a cruiser, so they knew a lot about, I'm assuming they knew about different models of bikes.
Right.
So they basically told me the model, which didn't mean much to me, but I knew it was like a crotch rocket type of sport bike. But they also said the front fairing had the image of the Joker painted on it.
Yeah.
And I was like a block away from this bar when the complaint came in. And sure enough, I was like stopping traffic one car away from the intersection, and the motorcycle went in front of me, just crossing the street right in front of me. So I turned behind it, and I turned on my blue lights, and immediately it was like he was just starting to go. So we went that short distance.
What do you mean starting to go?
Like he wasn't going to stop. He was He was already accelerating. So we, it was all, you know, that street, Rodick Street's real short, so.
And it's narrow.
Yeah, but anyways, he made
it's
down
full
the
of
stop.
Restaurants.
He made it down the stop sign and turned left and took off. And I made it down the stop sign shortly. I was driving a truck, by the way.
You were chasing him in the truck?
Yeah, not like a Dodge Charger or any of the fast cars. But
dude, that sucks.
So I turned left and turned on my sirens, and he was boogieing, and I was going as fast as I can down West Street.
Which is a street along the shore where rich people houses are, but also a lot of tourists.
Yeah, and you can park on both sides of the road, and it gets a little narrow. Not for a motorcycle, though. But I stayed with him. I stayed with him for a few miles all the way out of town. It was raining, too. And he didn't crash or anything. But once he got a little open stretch, he took off. And he turned left on the crooked road, and I never saw him again.
Ever. Because you have a rule, right?
Following.
Like, you can't, if you're chasing someone, you can't chase them past a certain speed in most instances, right?
Cause well, it's, every department's SOP is different, okay?
That means standard of operating something.
Standard operating procedures, babe.
Yeah, man.
But we didn't have like a speed rule. It's more of a necessity clause. You know what I mean?
Jeez. That was your phone falling.
I know, it fell off my lap.
Uh-huh.
Anyways.
So you chased him and you lost him.
Yep.
All right.
So then I went back to the station eventually or whatever. I think I went back to the bar, interviewed the complainant, and got as good a description as I could. Yeah. That might be when I learned his nickname. I'm not sure. I don't know if you want to introduce that now.
You can tell us his nickname. We'll just talk about it again, maybe.
But they said everybody called him $100 Bill. Because he'd go into a bar and he was always like trying to show off. So he'd order like one beer and then he'd leave a $100 bill to pay for it and just take off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's also where I learned that all the female people that waited on were creeped out by him.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Some of them might not have been. Who knows?
Maybe they're, yeah.
So then, you know what? I spent like hours upon hours. Man hours scouring the internet and looking for clues of where that motorcycle might be because it was so distinct. I think I finally found it listed for sale one day.
Oh, really?
But I couldn't tie it back to where it came from.
Yeah.
At least not before some other stuff happened.
Okay, so can you describe William physically? Like,
not from that incident.
I know, but can you describe him now?
Oh, yeah, he was a pretty big guy. He was like 6 foot, I don't know, 6'2". I don't remember. He might have been 5'10", but he was
I think he was a big guy.
Yeah, I think he was 6 foot or 6'2". And he was pretty husky.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A little bit overweight, but more like the more like the hardworking or athlete, used to be an athlete overweight, you know what I mean?
Like, you could imagine he maybe played high school football, but yes. not like for a super amazing high school football right. team, and then, you know, had some beers and
right. yeah.
got older. Yeah, so I vaguely remember him.
Do you?
Yeah, I do, but not super well because I don't go to bars very often because I'm a weenie.
Yeah.
And I get scared by boys. All right, so a bit after that unsuccessful police chase, where Sean was responsible and wonderful, William showed up at another local bar that's now a community kitchen, and the owner called him in because everyone knew everything about everyone in Bar Harbor, and you responded with another officer, right? Was it the same? Was it
two other officers, okay. honestly, but
and
I don't remember who the third one was.
One is now our town harbor master.
Yeah.
And there was a scuffle, right?
Well.
Can you tell me about that?
We got
like
there.
He resisted arrest, right?
We got there, and I can't remember exactly how. I think right when the other officer and I, the one you referenced, were walking up to the front door, he was walking out.
Oh. And, that's a lot of man in one very small place. Because our harbor master is jacked. And Sean is like 6'6".
Yeah, yeah.
And Sean is not small. He's not chubby. He's just not a small man. He also looks like a football player at a better high school. Who probably played in college, too. That's what you look like.
Better looking, you said?
It's by a lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're right.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyways.
Oh, my God.
So he was coming out the door, and we were just kind of like, hey. And I don't even remember exactly how we knew what he looked like. I might have gone in the bar first or something. Maybe we just had the intuition that I was in, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember, but we started talking to him, and you could smell alcohol in the breath. Like, I was
well,
like,
he was in a bar.
So we were like, you know, you've been drinking, right? And I don't remember what he answered. I'm not getting any legality stuff.
Yeah.
But it was evident that he needed a field sobriety test.
Yeah.
So since I was a sergeant, I told the other officer to go ahead and take care of that.
Oh, God.
While I went inside to talk to the complainant.
Oh.
So I went inside, and the owner of this bar, at least half owner at the time, was also a female. And the same with the other bar, the original complainant,
yeah.
right? So she knew everything, like the history.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, he just pulled right up here in front of the bar and got out of the car, and I let him in. I took his order, and knowing who he was, and then I called you.
Oh.
Wow. Like, he didn't even have anything to drink in that bar because she never served him. She just took his order and
oh, really?
Called us. Yeah.
Wow.
So, now we knew what his car was, too, because she said it was the Audi parked right in front of the doors. So I go back outside, and the other officer's pretty much wrapping up his field sobriety and trying to, he's like, basically, you're under arrest, you know?
Yeah.
And next thing I know, him and William are on the ground wrestling around, so I had to go over and join in. And
so were you on the ground, too?
I actually ended up on my back. With
what?
Kind of like, yeah.
I've never seen you on your back.
Oh, I do all right on my back. I didn't stay there long. Anyways, but William was only had half his, like one leg and one side of him was kind of overlapping my body, but it was my gun.
Oh, nosy.
My gun side, so I didn't know where his hands were, so I started doing something and I extricated myself real fast.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure William didn't enjoy, I just don't remember what it was.
Okay. Maybe we all should not.
We got him under arrest, and the other officer took him to jail.
Okay.
Because we weren't taking him to the PD. But anyways, he identified himself there as Bill Tool.
Well, he might have been a tool, but that wasn't his
last
name.
He was definitely a tool.
Yeah. So then you searched his car, right?
Yes.
And in his car, his Audi, was a whole bunch of papers and financial information for someone who most definitely his name was not
Bill Tool.
And it also definitely wasn't
William Morris.
And it wasn't $100 bill.
It didn't say $100. No. There was no. So I was searching this car because at that time, search incident to arrest rules as set by like the Supreme Court and other superior, you know,
yeah.
higher courts were a lot more lax.
Huh.
And you could look for...
That's only 10 years ago, man. Like,
I know.
9 or so.
Yeah.
Wow.
So okay. They were medium Actually, they were going through the transgression, I think, at the time, because we arrested him for OUI, so we could only search for evidence of that particular crime. Like,
oh.
Well, you know, beer can's very small.
Right.
And so if you're looking underneath the seats and in glove boxes and stuff, and then you start to find, like, medical marijuana that's got somebody else's name on it under the seat.
Yeah.
And, like, the bag, the nice professional bag.
Did you find that?
Yeah.
Oh.
And,
That's not in the newspaper reports.
It doesn't matter.
Ah.
Probably been making my report. I don't know.
Okay. Where did the medical marijuana go?
Oh, it went into evidence. Anyways. Okay.
And it was a social security card, right?
Yeah.
A driver's license?
Yeah, but that was all in like a briefcase, but like a bag type of briefcase, you know?
Uh-huh.
There was a gym bag also with some stuff in it, and I can't remember, but it wasn't. Little tools.
Like, right.
I just can't remember what was special about it. So I ended up taking all that crap back to the PD. We had the car towed.
Yeah.
And then the other officer got to the jail, and this guy wouldn't give him his name. And somehow we ended up figuring out who he was. I don't know
who
why.
Who William Morse was.
Who he really was. Wow. And they ran him, and he actually had a couple arrest warrants and no license and all kinds of crazy stuff. So we knew he'd be in jail for just a little bit.
Right.
But the whole night, because I was like on the midnight shift, I was going through that paperwork, and it was all these records and notes of like passwords and account, like login information.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. And all like, accounts like, you know, IRAs and and bank accounts and all this information for Bellatieri.
For Richard. Right. So all that stuff belonged to Richard Bellatieri.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I said that night, I said, I bet you this guy's dead.
And I remember you.
Did I say it to you? Because I definitely said that to PD.
Yeah, you totally told me to.
Yeah.
So.
And then the next day, like, the day shifts came on, and they couldn't make contact with anybody that knew Bill. Richard, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Richard Bellatieri for a while. And then finally, we got a hold of somebody, like an ex-wife or something.
Yeah.
Learned about their residence in Hall Quarry.
Uh-huh.
So I drove out there. And talk, because he was renting that place.
Right.
And talk to the renters, and they're like, yeah, this guy comes and gets a check once a month. And they described William Morris.
Oh, man.
So, And they were like, other than the check picking up, we've never met Richard Bellatieri. Like, we rented a house via the internet and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so they didn't know who Richard Bellatieri was.
Yeah, they
visually.
Just assumed that it was this other guy, William Morse. Right. So Richard was missing for a year when you searched William's car and started to put two and two together. And one of his tenants, right?
Yeah.
Who, maybe the one that you were talking to, said he had friends but no family nearby.
Yeah, that was the same one.
People said that Richard liked raw food. He was a minimalist. He was a smart guy from somewhere around New York City when police were like trying to figure out who he was, and that he was eccentric. And the tenant told the BDN reporter he was into esoteric jazz and books and stuff, which kind of cracks me up because God knows if you're into books, you're eccentric. he didn't really talk too much about his past, but I don't think he would have rubbed anybody the wrong way. And I think this was the tenant that actually knew him because he had more than one tenant.
Yeah.
But what this tenant couldn't get, and what boggled his brain, was that Richard was missing for so long and nobody reported it. He couldn't understand how anyone couldn't notice, right? Because Richard wasn't a shut-in. He wasn't a hermit. He was an accountant. You know, he did all these good things. And that's really what breaks my heart about this story, because it makes you wonder, like, would people notice if you were just gone?
Right.
Like, and would you notice if, like, you know, one of your friends and it's COVID and you know, everybody stops, like, talking quite as much and our habits change? Like, would we notice if they were gone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just sad. But one of the bigger things in the story that confused people is that Richard and William were so different. So how did they know each other, right?
Right.
And one of, I think his friends called him Rick, actually. Oh, nosies. That was my phone. One of his friends called him, I'm so sorry about that. Anyways, one of his Trenton neighbors told reporters that Morse, William Morse, had been helping Richard, who's a little older, with handyman jobs and property work on that house in Trenton. And they basically met on Craigslist. Always scary. Yeah. In spring 2012. And Rick needed a carpenter to work on that duplex off the Goose Cove Road in Trenton that he was building. And Morse was a carpenter. It is what our assistant attorney general called, quote, a fatal mistake later. But it seemed to, you know, really be innocent. Matt Stilfen, that tenant we just mentioned, he rented from Richard back in 2012 for May and June. And that's why he wasn't who you interviewed. You mm-hmm. interviewed another one later. And he said he saw Bellatieri at the house a lot, but he was really residing in his unfinished property in Trenton. And Stilfen saw Bellatieri and Morse together. Richard and William would tease each other, he said, like kind of jab and poke at each other, but it was nothing really big, nothing really heated, you know, nothing that would make you go, oh gosh, no, you know. Right. He told Bill Trotter, a reporter that we know very well, writing then for the Bangor Daily News, I don't think they had known each other that long. They were an interesting duo. An interesting duo is the kind of phrase that leaves a lot of things wide open. But what happened next was that nobody saw William and Richard together for years, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. So while Richard was missing, the other part of that interesting duo, William Morse, began withdrawing money from Richard's bank account, probably with all the logins that Sean found in the car, right?
Yep.
While Richard was missing, William also drove Richard's blue Audi all around town. So that wasn't even Richard's. I mean, that was Richard's car, not William's.
Right.
And while Richard was missing, William bought a boat. He bought a hot tub, and he bought another car.
That was something that I forgot to say, was that obviously the Audi from when he got arrested for OUI came back to Richard Bellatieri.
Yeah, that's important, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And while Richard was missing, like Sean said, Bar Harbor bartenders started calling William Morse $100 bill because of those huge cash tips.
I would say he also bought a motorcycle as well.
Yeah, probably. And while Richard was missing, William sometimes pretended to be him. Pretending to be Richard when a guy who worked at a bike shop was renting Bellatieri's house in the Hall Quarry. Mm-hmm. While Richard was missing, William rented Richard's house on 91 Hall Quarry Road to Brianna Alley and Peter Neblett. And that married couple had responded to an ad again on Craigslist. And when they were shown the house by William, he introduced himself as Richard. Brianna said, told papers that the owner seemed desperate. They didn't even have to provide references. They only had to pay $500 a month.
What?
Yeah, and in this town and on this island, nobody pays $500. That's a room.
That house has to have poltergeist activity every night.
Yeah.
For $500 a month.
You can have a cesspool in your basement with black, like, tentacles coming out of it, you're still gonna have to pay $2,000.
That's right.
So she later told the Bangor Daily News that it, quote, seemed too good to be true, which I guess it was. He had us fooled. He even showed us the deed to the house. We had no reason to believe he wasn't Richard Bellatieri. I gotta tell you that if I'm renting from someone and they show me the deed to their house.
Yeah, he seemed a little over the top there.
Yeah, I'd be like, that's a little weird, man. So once in July, after Sean arrested him, Morse posted bail and took a taxi to Richard's home in Trenton. He even called the police dispatcher. I don't know if this was Bar Harbor or not.
It was Bar Harbor.
I thought it might be. Mm-hmm. Pretending to be Bellatieri and told them where exactly to tow his car.
Mm-hmm.
Did the dispatcher know what was going on?
Oh, we never moved his car, that's for sure.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, we definitely knew what was going on.
Wow. That's so ballsy. That's ballsy. Okay, and he spent a lot of nights at a female friend's house on Peaks Hill Road in Dedham, which is pretty far away, honestly, where one of the neighbors who met him just 6 weeks before William was arrested told a BDN reporter that Morse was, quote, later told the reporter, sketchy. Mm-hmm. He said he wasn't impressed by him. He and a female friend, they just didn't seem a likely duo, any more likely than Bellatieri and Morse. But they did both love motorcycles, so they had that in common at least. The neighbor in Dedham said he met Morse about 12 times and even shared meals with him. Also, during that time, police believe that William Morse was staying at Richard's unfinished house in Trenton. So...
Listen, when I managed to find a picture of that motorcycle online, it was like a Craigslist post.
Yeah, it's all Craigslist.
He was trying to sell it. Is it? It's all in there?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
I just, over and over again, it's like the Craigslist case, you know? Like.
So it was a picture of the motorcycle. Right behind the motorcycle was a hot tub. And you could tell it's like in the living room of a house.
Really?
Yeah.
The motorcycle and the hot tub?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Definitely.
Oh, was it the house in Trenton?
I'm sure it was.
Oh, my God. That's weird. All right. So, law enforcement officers, not Sean, we're going to interview William at the Peaks Hill Road residence in Dedham, Maine, which is about 40 minutes
up from Trenton. Maybe less, but it depends.
And on the tourists. And it's like kind of more towards the interior part of Maine and our big city of Bangor where Stephen King lives. But other officers at the same time spotted Morse zipping along early this Thursday morning in late July, like at 7 a.m. in the nearby town of Holden. So the police followed him because they're like, oh, shoot. So Morse obviously had been in trouble before. And part of his bail conditions was that he couldn't operate a motor vehicle. But the officers didn't stop him because, you know, bigger things are in play, I think. Right. And they just followed him to the Peaks Hill Road property right across from the Peaks Hill Lodge Banquet and Event Center. And right near that other neighbor who was talking, right?
Right.
And once he was inside, they got a search warrant and they tried to call him, but he doesn't answer.
Of course he's not.
Would you answer if the po-po called you?
I don't know. That's, it's hard to put yourself in that sort of position, but William Morse was not like a,
he's not yet.
He's not like a forward, confident kind of criminal.
Oh my God. All right, so though the police were there, he somehow managed to escape the house without anybody seeing him.
He went out the back door.
Out the back door.
Yeah.
So he ran off on foot, but a Maine Drug Enforcement Agency agent saw Morse a few miles away, again on Route 1A in Holden, this time at G&M Variety Market. Shout out for no money, because we always stop there for food on road trips.
Oh, yeah, they have the, like, if you go, if you want food to eat in your car on the go, it's a good place to eat.
Yeah,
they got a little, what do you call that? Just a little kitchen area. Yeah, like a little buffet. You can get General Tso's chicken.
You can get macaroni and cheese.
Oh, you can get barbecue ribs, whatever you want.
And the ladies who work there are lovely, and they always, like,
yeah, they
are
always
so
put
kind
up
to
with
us.
This bullcrap, because we're like, hey, can you add, like, can we see, like, a half an ounce of that looks like?
And they'll be like, no. And they'll look at Sean and be like, baby, you can eat 10 ounces.
Yeah, they'll be like, all right, make it a pound.
And he charms them all. But anyways. They didn't arrest William at GMM Variety Market, which is very nice, because I don't think those ladies could have handled, like, they don't deserve having that happen there.
Yeah.
Instead, they watched him get a ride with a friend and motor on back towards Ellsworth, Maine, which is, again, heading towards Trenton and the island. A little ways into the trip, they stop him and arrest him. But back at home, other officers were going through that Trenton house, thanks to the warrant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it turns out that sometime between June and October of 2012, William Morse brutally murdered Richard, right?
Yes.
Nobody's exactly sure when. Mm-hmm. They found Richard's body on a Sunday, and he was on his own property in Trenton, surrounded by trees, quite literally. They had to identify him via his dental records because he'd been there buried under potting soil for so long, and a big tree was on top of him as well. An autopsy showed he'd been shot twice in the head and in two other places, but there's a little bit of discrepancy in the reports about this.
Really?
Yeah. Morse's attorney, Jeff Toothaker, who we know really well,
yep,
argued, I taught his children gymnastics and he's been a lawyer for Sean before. Not really.
No, just he gave me some advice.
Some free advice. Toothaker argued that Morse might have taken Richard's identity, but that didn't prove that he killed Richard and dug a grave and threw potting soil over him and left him there.
Of course it doesn't.
No. So there's a trial. And at the trial, Morse tried and tried to be his own co-counsel, but Toothaker and his other attorney are like, hell to the no. Like, no, 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 no. There were a lot of delays throughout the trial because Morse had some medical issues.
Yeah.
And then finally, a trial got underway in April 2015 at Hancock County Unified Criminal Court. It began with a Pink Floyd reference and a movie reference, because that's how we roll in Maine, I guess. And Assistant Attorney General Donald Macomber talked about the song Money. You know that song by Pink Floyd?
Yeah.
Is that the Money, Money, Money?
No, it's what is Money. I don't know the words.
Okay, yeah. And he also talked about Gordon Gekko, a character in Wall Street.
All right. I never saw that movie either.
Well, it's all right, baby. Sean has never seen many a Marvel movie. Only Under Duress. He's not a movie person that way, I guess. So, anyways, Assistant Attorney General Macomber said that Morse wanted to spend Richard's money, and that was why he killed him. William Morse has 175,000 reasons to kill Rick Bellatieri, he said. He shot him. He dragged him into the woods behind the house they'd been working on, Macomber said. Then he put potting soil on top of his body. Some say he chopped the tree down to land on top. Some say it came down naturally. At the trial, Jeff helped represent Morse, like we talked about. Mm-hmm. Again, his brother is our veterinarian. And Jeff said... It's a very small town here in Maine. But Jeff said it was all circumstantial. And he said circumstantial cases ask you to guess about key elements of a crime. He said nobody knew where Richard was shot. Nobody knew exactly where he was shot or when. And nobody knew who was there when he was shot. Right?
Right.
So at the trial, Dr. Marcella Sorg, a forensic anthropologist, talked about examining Richard's body and about how it was in the potting soil and how a tree was on top of that potting soil. And she showed images of his skull and pointed out the bullet holes there and explained the fragments of bullets that were in Richard's upper thigh. And then a detective took the stand, and the bullet size matched a firearm owned by one of William's ex-girlfriends. Mm-hmm. But William's DNA wasn't on that gun, which, I mean, it's been a while, right?
Yeah, it's been a while. That could have been cleaned. If he cleaned it every day since he... apparently shot Richard.
Yeah. It would just be gone.
Yeah.
All right. So Morse, I don't know anything about cleaning evidence. It's not my ballywick, man.
Right.
I'm a good girl. So Morse tells Pickering, the state police detective, right?
Yeah.
That during an interview, like right after they found him hiding in a closet at a duplex at one point, I guess, under a pile of clothes. That was Richard
Bellatieri's duplex.
All right. So... at one point, they find him hiding under, like, he's hiding. I'm being weird. Under a pile of clothes in a closet, like, you can't find me. Morse tells Pickering, that state police detective, that he was only there to grab some of his stuff. And he said Richard was in New York. He'd be back at the end of the week. And the bank card, yeah, Richard's bank card, yeah. He gave it to him so he could get paid for his work while Richard was away. Like, he had it all.
Yeah.
Lying like a lying liar, right? So, he got a phone call one day and went scurrying off to New York, Morse tells Pickering. He said something about a house down there. Pickering asked if he'd been pretending to be Richard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And not that I recall, the defendant replied. The defendant being Morse. And yes. That just sounds like so presidential.
It sure does.
Like, I don't remember. I do not recall.
Not to my knowledge.
Not to my knowledge. So... also, obviously, William didn't have a hard time lying, right? And it became part of the trial, became focused on pot.
Mm-hmm.
And at the trial, whether or not Richard's quote-unquote eccentricities included growing pot at his Trenton property became part of William's defense. As his attorney asked a former police officer who was part of the Hancock County Drug Enforcement agency about the 261 plants they found on the property in July of 2013. And he asked if the pot had been planted there before. He insinuated, the attorney, that if Bellatieri was potentially making hundreds of thousands off selling pot every year, then his murder might have to do with drug dealers and purchasers. And so the prosecutors were like, yeah, Richard's been dead for a year in July of 2013. If anyone was using the property to grow pot, which was still illegal then in Maine, it had to have been not Richard. It had to have been remorse. And to prove that, they called one of Richard's friends, Pauline, who met Richard at ballroom dance classes a year before she was killed, and she said he never smoked pot and that she had never known to grow pot and that the claims were bullshit. Mm-hmm. But you just said you found medical marijuana.
Yeah.
Was it his?
It was, I don't remember. Maybe it wasn't identified, but Morse obviously wasn't going to be kicking around a card.
All right.
You don't get, when you go to the store to buy it on a card, it's just branded with the whatever it is. It doesn't come in like a bag from the pharmacy at Walgreens with your name and crap.
All right.
You know, they can give a care who you are as long as you got a card, really.
So this lady kind of gave me hope because she actually did notice that Richard was gone. Because she called him and she emailed him in May, I guess, and he didn't reply, and he always replied. And another one of Richard's friends, John Siegel, a teacher in Pennsylvania, he rented from Richard in the summers and had visited the Trenton house and had met Morse. But when he met Morse, Morse said his name was Bill Toole.
Oh, really?
Yes. And John told the court, according to the BDN, Bill Toole came by the Mount Desert house and said Richard had a death in his family and had to leave town. Morse said he was managing all the properties while Richard was gone. So that's what he said to, like, the guy who knew him, right? And he said that he knew, John said that he knew there were marijuana plants growing in the woods and that they were Morse's, not Richard's, but he never saw them.
Okay.
So he, like, totally annihilated the Richard's a that pot claim, dealer claim, right. And he came back to run again in 2012, that year after Richard died, or 2013, or some. And Morse told him Rick was out in California and he got some woman pregnant, which was like, oh, okay. And finally, another guy, a worker from Bangor, Maine, who Morse hired to help him continue building Richard's house in Trenton, he lived there for a bit while working, and he saw a variety of plants, 4 inches and 3 feet tall, that Morse said to him were, quote, his babies. So that whole thing got annihilated. After all these hours of the trial, after all the police work and all the evidence, William Morse, 45, is found guilty of killing Richard Bellatieri. And you'd think that would kind of be the end of things, right?
Yeah.
But there wasn't the end of things. It's because William Morse, Bill Toole, $100 bill, he made things weirder. On the day of his sentencing, against the advice of Toothaker, he confessed. He confessed that he killed Richard. Like, right there. You know, like...
That's smart, dude.
Wait. Assistant Attorney General Donald Maycumber, again, who prosecuted the case with Deputy Attorney General Lisa Marchese, or Marchese, had been a prosecutor for 26 years at the time of this trial. And he said, I think it was the Bangor Daily again, that it was the first time he'd seen a defendant confess during the sentencing.
I'm sure you don't confess until after you've been sentenced, at least.
Yeah, so...
Holy crap.
The thing is that a lot of people think that Morse just kept trying to hurt Richard. Maycumber is quoted as saying he essentially was trying to blame the victim. By his own admission, he's a cold-blooded killer. Morse told everyone there, during the sentencing, that he shot Richard twice in the head and once in the foot. So there's obviously, like, these inconsistencies, right?
Right.
Because other newspaper reports say 4 times, another thing says twice, and fragments in his foot. So, you know, no other reporter mentions that inconsistency anywhere, but there is that inconsistency. Anyway, Richard, like, just stood up there in his orange jail uniform, this big hulking guy, and in this gruff Maynard voice, told everyone assembled that he became enraged that morning when he woke up in the house in Trenton that he was helping Richard build, and he was soaked in pee. He said the night before they had an argument, you know, and when he woke up soaked in urine or covered in urine, he assumed that Richard did it, had just come in and peed on him.
Right.
So he told everyone that he drove to Southwest Harbor where his girlfriend lives, and at her house or place or whatever, she, I don't know if it was an apartment, he got her gun. And he drove back to Trenton, which had to take like 20 to 30 minutes one way because there were tourists then.
Oh, each way, for sure.
Yeah. And when he got back to Trenton, he says Richard was in the yard and he shot him there. Again, according to Morris, twice in the head and once in the foot. Then he dragged him across the ground to a swampier part of the property and eventually put potting soil on top of his body. Justice William Anderson said after this that Morse had no remorse at all in his sentencing statement and that he was, quote, condemning the conduct of the victim before killing him.
Right.
And a lot of people think that his statement ended up adding 6 decades to his sentence. All the other charges from the day of his arrest and his initial incident in Bar Harbor were basically dismissed because they didn't matter anymore.
Not for the, over this. It's chump change compared to the murder charge.
Yeah, and so at 45 years old during the trial, it basically seemed like, you know, Morse is going to be in jail forever.
Yeah.
Fox Bangor quotes May Cumber as saying that Morse's confession was basically bullshit. He said, "This is the first time in my 26 years where after a jury trial where the defense was someone else did it, where a defendant stands up and admits to being a premeditated killer. He took this opportunity, again, to essentially blame the victim for making him so mad that he would run down to his girlfriend's house, get a gun, and come back and execute him." Like, that's so effed up.
Mm-hmm.
So effed up. And the judge agreed, believing that Morse was acting out of greed and only greed. Much like that Pink Floyd song in the Wall Street reference, I guess. After the trial, Fox and other news outlets quote Robert Dillon, who'd been friends with Richard most of their lives. "He was a very hardworking, honest guy that believed in justice very much," Dillon said. Actually, Richard's one of his older brother, the oldest in their family, mm-hmm. had died a few years before, right after he retired to Florida. And he was a I think, Suffolk County cop.
Yeah.
For a long time. So, like, you can believe that, you know, in this family, like, a belief in truth and justice
was probably pretty strong.
So, Dillon said he was a very funny guy. He was sort of every man. He was just a real good guy. He worked hard all of his life. He saved for the future. And then this guy came and killed him just to steal his money. Which is so friggin' sad, you know?
Yep.
At the time of this podcast, William Edward Morse is still in Maine State Prison, a man in his early 50s, incarcerated because of his greed, or to hear him tell it because a nice man allegedly peed on him. His earliest release date is set for 2065.
You know, there's a little bit of story that's missing from that.
I would love to hear
it. And I don't know if it ever made it into the public purview.
Well, let's hear it, man. What is it?
Well, there were people that said that they were in a relationship.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
And that Richard actually told somebody, probably one of those witnesses you mentioned, that he had never been happier in his life than he was with Million Morse.
But there's no...
And that is, in fact, I guarantee you that they were in a relationship.
Really?
And on Richard's end, it was probably real. But on Morse's end, it was pure fiction, because once he got to know Richard a little bit and found out he had a little bit of money, which to Morse would have seemed like a good deal, because he was not smart enough to know how to, you know, use money, right?
Yeah.
All he wanted to do was party. So that was his way into getting... Because if you're just working for somebody, you don't really... You don't reveal your secrets of passwords and logins.
Well, maybe he had it written somewhere.
Yeah, right. And his officer or whatever. But still, if I'm working for you, you don't let me wander around your house, even if I'm staying there.
Well, after you're dead, you can't keep them from wandering
around
your
house.
That's
true, but he wouldn't have known.
Well, there's nothing in any reports about that. Like, that might have been gossip.
It wasn't. It's stuff that didn't make it into the paper because it's not evidentiary worthy. Probably.
Well, maybe it just befuddles the case. Like, it muddies it almost. But,
all I'm saying is that William Morse killed him. He didn't kill him because he got pissed on. He killed him so he could spend his money.
Yeah.
The prosecutor is 100% correct.
And that's what the court case
And that was his guise to get close to
But Richard. Both of them are connected with women. multiple times. And yes. But they could be bisexual. But we don't know. So we're not saying that. We're just saying that it's the scuttlebutt.
Right,
that,
exactly.
That there was scuttlebutt about that at the time.
Oh, there definitely was.
All right, so though Morse is in prison and will probably remain there until he's dead, his impact definitely lives on, right? So Richard's gone. All his friends, all his family have lost him. All those kids and families on MDI who he could still be helping write college loan applications have lost him. All those dance partners have lost him. Like, his dream of building a duplex in Trenton, that's over. And all those people who William contacted pretending to be Richard, they have to deal with the ripples of those lies. Like, the questions of trust. Like, what does it mean when you accept at face value that someone is who they tell you that they are? And what does it mean when you don't? You know, like...
I know, you start asking for driver's licenses now and, like, people introduce themselves to you.
Yeah, like, can you imagine how all those people felt that they had been tricked that way by a murderer?
Mm-hmm.
And so Allie, who was that one of the Hall's quarry tenants, told the Bangor Daily News, "We were really freaked out and scared. It's weird that he could get away with it for a whole year and no one made that connection." And that sort of neighbor and Dedham man, like that lady that Morse was always hanging out with, he agreed. He said, "He didn't strike me as that type of person either," Langley, that guy's name, said. "You just never know. You got no soul if you murder someone, especially if you've been living in that guy's house."
Yep. That's right.
Yeah, and Richard, you know, he left behind, like, a brother, a sister, a bunch of nieces and nephews. I know at least
an ex-wife.
I know at least one of his nephews was at the trial. I mean, at the sentencing. And before he died, his brother Robert, like we mentioned, and his sister Mary Lou Ferraro, and a nephew all died before him. And it just kind of breaks my heart that that family had to go through that. And all Richard's friends had to go through that because one guy wanted to be $100 bill.
Yep.
You know?
That's a good summation, baby.
Yeah, it's so sad.
It's really good.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You know, pay attention to your friends. No, seriously.
Who,
like,
you think are your friends?
No,
or where
no,
your friends are?
Like, just how keep tabs on them, you know? Like,
how long has it been since you've heard from your friend?
Yeah, like, especially the ones who live alone. I had a book last week. Or no, not last week. Last year. In our Bar Harbor Mysteries, and in it, like, it turns out one random person's been missing and nobody realized that he was gone.
That's right.
I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember that.
Yeah, I don't know if that was influenced by this or just my own deep fears of, like,
being gone and nobody noticing.
Yeah, and to be fair, people did notice, but they didn't, you know, they might have thought Richard was ghosting them or a little bit.
Just busy.
And not everyone noticed, you know, and that's...
No, only a couple of people said they noticed.
Yeah, we gotta...
Some people didn't know.
Yeah, we gotta keep tabs on our people.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Forever and ever.
Forever and ever.
I keep tabs on you, baby.
I know you do. She writes down my mileage every morning.
Every morning. Look at his cell phone record.
I have to send...
Lying! That's
I
a
have
lie.
To send the picture of my location every 10 minutes.
Every 10 minutes, put a GPS pin in there.
Thank
no.
God this island has horrible cell phone numbers.
You're so mean to me. thank you for listening to Dude Nao. We really appreciate it.
It's Dude Nao.
Dude no.
Dude no.
No. On to Dude No. And we really appreciate it. This is only our second episode, so thanks for bearing with
thank
us.
Thank you so much for
Please
listening.
Don't downvote us on YouTube. That's just rude. The end.